search. Each man different, living his own way, searching, discovering numero uno.
Welcome, BBCers, to episode number 159 of the Broken by Concept podcast, the number one solo educational and motivational podcast. Curtis, today's episode, we're going to bring out the stash of all, you know, this weighs 50 kilos of all our mailbag questions. All right, Curtis? We've had them building up for a while. We've done some episodes without mailbag questions, like our interview with Froxom and also Expetu. We've had some guest episodes, obviously, earlier.
Some of the case studies as well.
And yeah, so just to give you context, we get about 10 to 15 a week, right? And we only do maybe three sometimes, right? So we've got a big backlog.
A lot of backlog.
And if you're, you know, sending in, you're a little bit upset about, you know, maybe your email, you really wanted to get it, just bump it. Just reply to the email that you sent, say just saying bump or something like that. And then, because I've lost them. They're just so far down in our mailbox.
In the void. And we're going to get through as many as we can today.
That's all. We'll get through as many as I can. So we haven't done this for a while. And Curtis, remember, this podcast, it's all about the community at the end of the day. This doesn't exist if there's not people to help. We learn so much about when people write in, not even just through people that write in the podcast, also people in our program, the case studies. This helps us learn. We become better teachers. We can't just sit here in our little lab, you know, with a coffee, just like figure out the perfect way to coach. We can't. We need the people. Yeah. It's literally not possible if we don't have the people, right? So these segments, really important. It's great to hear other people's stories. And this is just reality. This is real. This is what people are dealing with in the League of Legends community. You know, we like to talk about, you know, problem solve people's questions. We also have success stories that we like to cover to give people motivation and think, okay, maybe, you know, maybe people have benefit from our process, our learnings, and how they've specifically used our process to benefit. We love those type of emails. One thing I didn't mention, Curtis, is that you've got a new look today, Curtis.
Yep.
You want to explain yourself?
Just clean shaved. So I'm heading to China tomorrow.
Yep.
So I'll be gone for 2 weeks. So there'll be one episode missing for those 2 weeks. So starting fresh, new country, new me. And then, yeah, so hopefully I'm going to try and squeeze in some Chinese super server solo queue.
The super server.
So if you're watching this, I could have actually already been playing on the super server.
Yep.
So my plan is to try and play this weekend on the super server. I'm going to try and stream it and find a way to stream it. Won't be from Twitch. Probably from one of the Chinese streaming sites. So we'll have a crack. I don't think I'm going to be able to play much. I'm hoping at least a few days. But we'll see how we go.
I mean, by the time this episode's out, you might have finished your super server journey.
That's right.
Because we're recording this on
on the Thursday.
The Thursday. You leave tomorrow. This episode gets released Tuesday.
Yeah. Next, the week off.
Australian time.
That's right.
Australian morning.
Beautiful.
All right. Well, I guess if we miss the next week's episode, then Curtis can give us an update on his finding, his learnings on the Chinese.
Yeah. When I get back, we'll fill you guys in.
Ionian super server. All right. Jumping straight into mailbag here, Curtis. Our first question here comes from Mr. Vortex, looks like.
Okay.
Hello, Nathan and Curtis. I'm a mid-master 350 LP Jax One Trick who wants to branch out and add more champions to my pool. I'm not sure the best way to go about this, though, as I feel like if I play them on my main account, I'm griefing my teammates, as I'll not perform the best, certainly for the first 20 games or so. That being said, playing in normals and on Smurf does not demonstrate much help either, as I feel like the mechanical difference is too big and it isn't solo practice. Essentially, some of my secondary champions are too good to Smurf or play against casual players, but then it's too bad to play against people in my Elo bracket, Master 350 LP. What should I do?
Well, there's... Okay.
So Tyler Zim was swapping from being a one trick. So he wants to transition from a one trick to learning new champs.
Well, the reality is that, you know, you ideally need to have a Smurf that is somewhat in the realm, not the same Elo bracket, but somewhere in the realm of...
Let's do an example here. So let's say he's 350 LP. An adequate learning account for him would be Diamond 2.
Yeah. That'd be great. Mid-diamond three account would be great. And let's say, hypothetically, you go onto that Diamond 3 account with your second champion. Let's say, for example, they want to pick up Ornn. And they're winning in Diamond 3. Dominate. Okay, and even if you push that account up and then you climb to Master, zero LP with that account, at some point, you know, you're going to start to, it might get a little bit trickier. And the reality is that, you know, you shouldn't need to play a mass amount of games on a second account, right? Mm. The reality is that, you know, at some point when you do add it back onto your main, you are going to go down a little bit of LP. That's just the reality, right? You know, it'd be Fairyland if you played that Ornn on your main account and didn't go down somewhat. There is going to be a period of an adjustment period. So I would recommend get that second account up, climb with that. We're going to use Ornn for a placeholder here. Climb that up. And then once you've got about, how many games would you say, especially if the champ's different? So let's say, for example, you know,
I reckon you only need about 30 to 50 games.
If it's very, very different.
30 to 50.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe. I think if it's somewhat similar.
I agree. Yeah.
Like, I think if it's similar, like sometimes even 15 to 20.
20, yeah.
Like, it depends how different it is from the main champ you play. Because again, ultimately, and we covered this actually in the episode with Experto, we both believe that playing against the highest caliber players is the fastest way to learn, right? Mm. So even though you could theoretically learn, you know, playing Ornn in Diamond 2, you really want to get those games in on your main account as much as you possibly can, even if it drops you down a little bit of LP, because you can get that back very quickly.
50 yeah. games is way too much. I don't think about that. That's so many games.
I mean, I would do that if it's very different. Like, like for example, when I first picked up Zed or Qiyana, you know, that is something you kind of have to do. But for a Chen, similar, no way. That's way too many.
I don't know if it's because of my MMR on my accounts. Because when I've been learning my champs, I've been doing normal draft pick, right?
Mm.
And I've been playing against, yeah, like Diamond players and stuff like that.
Mm.
But again, I think it's because of my MMR. And that's, I think it's been fun. I picked up, like, Udyr, Wukong, and I played these in, like, you know, Master tier, you know, 400 or 500 LP after like 30 games, and I was fine. I was popping off.
Yeah, but I think there's a difference between jungle and laners as well, right?
Potentially, yeah.
Because jungle, like,
you've got to know the identity. You got to really know what it feels like to carry with your champion. And I think that's actually good to play against worse players in the
AI. Yeah, but I would say for, like, he's talking from a top perspective. The reality is that you got to know the matchups, and you got to know the quality of the caliber of the laner between, say, let's say a normal game and a D4 opponent in a normal game versus like a 300 LP master player in lane, at least, is going to be quite different.
So you think a jungle is easier to pick up the champs?
I think it's different. I'm not going to say it's easier. I think it's just different. I think that, you know, as a laner, again, we get specific. He's playing, let's say he picks up Fiora.
Yeah.
You know, the reality is that, okay, there's multiple aspects, right? When you're learning a champion, you've got to figure out the champ's identity and what its key reference points are, when you're strong, when you're weak. I think you could do that in any normal game, low elo, high elo. Then there's the matchups, right? The laning phase. I think that's where I think the biggest disparity between the high and the lower ranks would be. And then there's kind of the mid game and the team fighting, which I think you could probably learn in Smurfs as well. So I think just that one specific element, the lane, the interaction with a better quality opponent, because the matchups are going to play out, in my opinion, quite differently, especially in top lane, if anything. Imagine versing a 400 LP Fiora, you know, versus a Diamond 4 one or something like that. It's just a different game.
Yeah. All right, so let's get the steps out step by step. Get a second account in ranked up to mid-diamond. Step number two, play only that champion, obviously, on that. You know, don't play any secondary or anything like that, just because, you know, just dodge and then just play on your main account or whatever. And then get to a comfortable level there. And then what do you think about this, Curtis? Now, then go back to the main and then have a 2-1 ratio of 2 games new champ, 1 game Jax in a 3-block. If you said 3-block model, get really specific here.
Well, what I would actually recommend slightly different is that when he is learning the champ on the second account, I recommend the 2-for-1 method there, where he would do 2 blocks. Let's say he's learning Ornn, 2 blocks of Ornn on that second account for every 1 block of Jax on his main account. And the reason you do that is so you can keep touch with your main champ. So if you played like 8 blocks in a row in Diamond, you're going to lose touch of what it feels like to play in a Master 300 game, right?
Yep.
So then you do that for a while until you get comfortable. And that could be 20 games. It could be 15. It could be 30, right? Depending on the difficulty of that champ you're picking up. Then when you pick it up a new main, I think that you should just alternate as you normally would. And kind of, I don't think you would want to do it like a specific ratio. I think 50-50 type thing. Like, okay. I think you really want to get uncomfortable. Like, you definitely want to
get a lot
of games in.
Yeah.
But I don't really have a ratio for that personally. But I feel like that's when you got to consider a combination of two things. The viability of that champion in that game, as well as, okay, this is a game where I know I could 100% win with Jax, but you know what? It's also viable for Ornn. So they're the games, like, they're the ones you should kind of pick Ornn.
Yeah. That, my game might be a different case, because you know how we talk about, Curtis, you got to learn to play your champ in hard games.
Yeah.
That's part of the champ mastery process.
Well, okay, again, let's get granular on this one. You know, when you're learning a champion at a new rank, you know, there's a very big difference between... You want to build some confidence, you know what I mean? In my opinion.
Confidence is very important.
I think, for me anyway, got it.
So you're saying play it in the easy games, start building the confidence there, and then,
Easier to mediocre ones, the average ones. But, I don't think I would actively blind pick or like actively counter pick myself with a champ I'm just picking up in a rank on my main. I can't imagine. Like, I feel like a Reddit analyst for saying that. Because I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Personally.
Yep. No, you're correct. You're spot on. I think that's theoretical. Let's just use Ornn because it's a super example, easy example. Let's say he's learning Ornn.
Mm.
You're not going to pick Ornn into a, let's say, a Cassiopeia mid.
A Braum support, maybe.
And then I was thinking more of like range, like a Kate Lux bot, Cassiopeia mid, a Fiora top.
Well, Braum's so good into Ornn, right? Because of the...
Oh, because it blocks
the... Yeah, it blocks the ult.
Yeah, okay, I guess so. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't play top. I don't even know what a hard game looks like.
I don't know either.
I'm just trying to think about tank busters.
I think Ornn, it's obviously the matchup, but I think it's more what you're paired with as well, like on your team.
How about like Red Kane, he's against Red Kane, Cassiopeia mid. That's probably pretty hard already game, right?
Fiora top. Versus maybe like a Singe top or something.
Yeah.
And like Singe good into Ornn. I don't know.
Yeah,
I wouldn't do that.
All right, our next question here comes from Michael. The title of his email is Reversed Rank Delusion. Hey guys, loved the delusional deconstruction video from last week. So that was our breaking down our Gold 4 Akshan player.
Okay.
I was talking about that video. I have a similar problem, but the other way around. About me, for the most part, I'm an on and off league player. I'm listening to every episode of your podcast if I'm actively playing. At some point, I'm just stopping to play LOL because I'm too busy doing other things or I'm bored or I need a break. Now I'm more focused, have a clear goal, and stop playing flex for the most part. I wanted to reach Master Tier. My biggest problem was playing a lot of champions. So I set myself a somewhat small champion pool. Ahri, Galio, Akshan, Sylas.
Wait, what?
Is that a small champ pool, Curtis?
Wait, let me look at this. My biggest problem
was playing a lot of champions. So I set myself a somewhat small champ with Ahri, Galio, Akshan, and Sylas.
What rank is this?
I would assume...
Okay, at the beginning of the season, I was kind of stuck around Platinum 1, D4, but now my progress somehow exploded, and I'm in D1. Okay, so he's D1 now. Yeah, I mean, four champs... What is it? Four champs, Ahri, Galio. I mean, it's doable in Diamond. Okay. I recommend three in Diamond, but high Diamond, four is doable.
Okay.
It's not an easy... Yeah, I mean, Galio is not overly hard to execute, and if he's got a history with any of those champs, I think it's doable. It's not an easy pull to execute, but it's doable.
Okay.
Yep.
My problem is that I'm lacking confidence because for me, it feels like I'm just lucky. It feels like my lane opponent is often very bad. If I check, it feels like they are off roll or not on their main champ. I'm scared that I'll get exposed if I meet a real Diamond 1 mid laner, but it just didn't happen yet. So my first question is, do you think it's actually possible to climb out of luck? And how am I supposed to overcome my somewhat weird narrative that destroys my confidence? It's actually my biggest problem right now because in my first and sometimes second game of the block, I'm very nervous and my trading is not precise. I miss minions and my overall laning phase is just unfocused. I'm actually confused because it's the first time I'm really going through with the process and it seems like it's working, but I feel like I'm just lucky.
You know, I'll be honest. I want to start by addressing something else here. I think really what this screams to me is he had unrealistic expectations of what the quality of gameplay would really be. Right, you get that commonly when people like they
have this picture of like this rank that because they've been struggling so much in, let's say, Platinum D4, right?
Yeah.
And what people miss though is all these things that they're getting better at the game at. They don't actually realize in all these things are actually helping them versus those players. So they don't look that special because League, no player looks special, right? Like. I mean, unless you're versus really, really, really high-level players. But, like, you can see the obvious mistakes that everyone's making. And it sort of breaks down that narrative.
Well,
like,
I think it's more, you know, when we're climbing, right? And, you know, especially when you're... Say you're a long-term platinum player. The first time you get diamond, you're expecting the diamond players...
You put this on the pedestal. They're, like, these insane players.
Yeah, like, it's not even... You're just expecting it to be this massive jump because you see this... Platinum border and this platinum icon that you've had for so long, now it's different. Surely the gameplay, there would be this massive jump in gameplay. The reality is that it's League is just this incremental, it's
very minimal,
small incremental differences,
but it's big. It's minimal and it's big. Right. You know, we talk about the difference between D1 and D4, you know, in the old season, whatever, is really big skill gap. But like, as you're slowly getting up there,
and it's big and in big and small ways, if that makes sense. It's like the small things have a big effect, right? It's like,
and it's easy, like, even the way he's viewing, like. Like, I think that what he's doing here is that he's nitpicking certain mistakes and think that player just sucks.
Mm.
But they're doing so many other good things that he's just not thinking about. You know what I mean? Like, players are really bad at judging the skill level of their opponents.
Okay, so you know when we were at, you know, school and university, you know, when, you know, you have an assignment or something, right? And what happens is they give you, like, this criteria. And basically, it's a criteria that outlines how they're going to mark you. So, okay, if you do this, this is kind of what gets an A+ or whatever it's called, or an S. This is what gets a B, C, blah, blah, blah. So you can clearly see on this kind of piece of paper, on this grid, okay, I need to do this, and that's how I get that score. But if I do that, I get this score. And we're taught, we're conditioned to think that there's a clear kind of, I guess, set of criteria that we can tick, and that's going to kind of give us the rank. Now, in reality, in League, we don't have that. There is no set criteria. It's not like Riot has this thing. It's like, if you do these things, you're going to be this rank. It's all up in the air. And we said many times, there's many ways that you can achieve a rank.
That's right.
Because the game is infinitely complex. Because where it gets even more complex is that the skills that you develop and to what extent can lead to a different rank depending on the champ you're playing. Right? You can have the same skill set, but on one champ that might get you Diamond 4, on another champ that might get you Platinum 3, just because of how that skill set interacts with that champion. So the reality is that the average player, I would say actually 99% of the actually entire player base, has a very, very bad idea, or does no, next to very little I'd idea, actually.
Next to zero,
next to zero idea of what actually compromises what actually leads to the skill or the behavior of that rank, right? So I can empathize with this guy's concerns because he's been probably told from maybe, imagine if his friends screams, oh my god, Diamond Master, oh my god, they're so good, Master. You know, they had this idea of what it probably was. They were probably thinking, okay, Master gameplay or D1 gameplay is probably closer to what we see when we look at LEC or LCS or, you know, whatever, LCK. When in reality, it's, you know, not even remotely close. So, you know, this guy just doesn't have a clear idea of what the behavior of that rank is.
Which is destroying his confidence. So he's doing it to himself. Right. He's like tricking himself.
Yeah, that's right. Himself. And then in reality, everything he's doing is, you know, the system doesn't lie, right? If you're at that rank, you are that rank, right?
Given enough time. Yeah. Because we don't know as well
how many games.
So, like, I mean, the answer is, his question here is it possible to climb out of luck? Yes, in the short term.
Yes, it is 100% lucky. You can climb out of luck, 100%. The reality is that it doesn't last in the long term.
Hmm.
Whether you're going to abuse a gimmick that's, you know, I actually had this conversation in Discord recently. Someone couldn't believe that there is such a thing as Elo inflation playing an OP champion. And I'm like, that is very, very, very real.
Of course.
you can literally, like, and me and Ajax, we come to, we both agreed. We came to the same number independently. We said, okay, if you're in, let's say you're a master 200 LP player, and you pick a champion, or you play a champion on release that's OP. Let's say you played Milio on release, or Aesol on release, whatever. You could 100%, no, not could, will get, I would say about a 300, I would say roughly.
Around 300 LP
difference. 300 LP difference in terms of above your rank. That's playing an OP champion on release. That's what can happen. Will that last? Will you stay at that Elo bracket? No, but you'll get there. And you're going to remember, this is why, you know, rank, it's your level of play, or your rank is only really like, you can only really say truly you're that rank if you sustain that rank for an extended period of time over many, many games.
Yeah.
Right? Peaking a rank, it's obviously good. It's a good sign, but it's not really a great indicator of your true level of play, unfortunately. So yes, you can get lucky, things can go your way, the right meta, the right teammates over a very short amount of games. But with more games, it's just going to calibrate you perfectly where you should end up in that meta, on that patch. So yeah, the reality is that, dude, you can't go around judging what is or isn't. You just don't have the skill set to understand what leads to that rank. So rather than just judging what should be punished, shouldn't be punished, just play the game.
Process, chill out.
Get better at specific skills.
Review your games, block out all this shenanigans going in your brain.
That's right. Yeah, because you're going to sit there and you can think there for as long as you want. You're not going to figure it out.
No.
You don't have the perspective. No. It's only with thousands of reviews, or you've played the game for many, 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 many years, would you even understand, have the perspective to understand what actually is the difference between the ranks.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Beautiful.
All right. Our next question here is from Lena from Denmark. Title is emails, Is It Flaming? Hey, Nathan and Coach, if you recognize my name, it's because I sent in a question back in episode 19, timestamp 2 hours.
Wait, 57. We did a long-ass episode. That can't be right.
Who was that with?
There's no way we did a three-hour episode.
I don't know. I have to check. Anyway, so 2 hours, 57 minutes, and 23 seconds. And for follow-up, I never got anywhere because my mental can't handle solo queue. So you guys were right. Okay, I don't know what we said in that thing.
Have to go
but
back.
Was that maybe the Swiffer episode?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well. Did we do a mailbag with Swiffer?
Yeah, we did. Let me, I was going to look here out of curiosity.
Maybe oldest. Episode 19.
Episode 19 was... Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, that episode went for three hours and 25 minutes.
Yeah, we did do a mailbag.
Oh my goodness.
Anyway, so episode 19 at 2 hours 57 minutes. Lena sent a question. I still main Cassiopeia, though, and my matchup knowledge has gotten a lot better. Now, I mostly play with friends while trying to improve my gameplay. I have a question about the mental part of League of Legends. Like I said, I play with friends a lot and for the most part enjoy doing so. But I often tilt because my friends have a habit of talking about what our random teammates are doing wrong in the voice chat and sometimes pinging on top of them. As someone who doesn't flame and also hate getting flame myself, it tilts me a lot when I hear this. According to my friends, calling out teammates in voice chat isn't flaming because they're not saying anything in League chat. I'm the only one in the group that seems to think it's flaming. The reason this affects me so much is because I get into the mindset that if I was a random person in the game, they'd be calling me out the same way. I told them this and one of them said they wouldn't and another said he wasn't sure if he would, but all I can think is they're obviously not going to be honest about it and tell me they would. I haven't seen any evidence that they wouldn't flame me. So my question is, what constitutes as flaming and what can I do about this? I don't want to give up on playing with them, but I also don't want to leave tilted almost every time. So far, I've tried to just focus on my own gameplay, and sometimes it helps, but it doesn't work all the time, especially if I already have a bad game.
This is so... I'm so glad we got this question, because I actually had someone in my program, and someone in my main program got caught flaming someone else in a game, and that person was another MLA member.
No way. Exposed. Whoa.
And I'm like, this was such a great like case study. Yep. And I'm like, you don't know who is on that other team. And I'm like, imagine if you flamed your friend. Imagine if you flamed someone that you're friends with, that you talk to on a daily basis, that you just didn't know that was their account. And it just puts it in perspective of like, it just goes to show how detached you can become. Like people can become when they're on the from reality. And then there's another person on the other side of that screen.
The anonymous aspect of League.
Yeah. And it's 100% flaming. It's indirect, but it's 100% flaming. And the reality is that, you know, this is a great case study. It shows like, you know, yes, they highly, highly probably would flame you.
Absolutely.
You know, and at the end of the day, you know, it's not doing anyone a favor. And look, everyone gets frustrated. And we're not going to sit here and say everyone's perfect and everyone's an angel. No one gets frustrated. Just the way you got to deal with that frustration is, you know, it's got to be, you got to figure out a productive way to do it, you know, to do it. And the reality, and this is what I think helps us, Nathan, I think for us, I want to speak on your behalf here, is that we know we make so many bad decisions.
Yeah.
We make so many
games. I always say mistakes. I have no right to ever flame someone else because the amount of LP I've lost for people in League of Legends is unbelievable.
And the difficulty of the game.
Yeah, deep respect for the game. Exactly right. And human capabilities. We're not robots, man.
It's so... There is an infinite amount of reasons why someone could make a mistake or not see a roam. Like, how common is it? How often is it where you... I'm gonna pose this question to you guys out there that you're playing lane, we'll say you're a laner, or even a jungler, a beginner jungler, but you're doing something, but because your mental stack is occupied with that one thing, maybe you're trying to time this last hit, or you're trying to go for this trade, and then someone walks over a ward, but because your attention isn't focused there, there could have been all these pings, they could have showed on three wards, but because you were doing something else, your mental stack was preoccupied, you die to that gank, or you died to that play. Now, you could, on the surface, from the outside, you could look like the biggest idiot, right?
Yep.
But again, you know, there was a perfectly good reason for you to not process that information. So this is where, like, if you have a deep respect of the difficulty of the game and understand how the mental stack works and understand that, you know, not all of us are on the same journey and not all of us take the game as seriously as well as each other, you know, just relax, you know. We're all having a crack in our own way. So yeah, I mean, it's a pretty simple question and answer, but something to think about anyway.
Just from understanding, I'm going to assume Lena's a girl, her friend's perspective, you know, humans bond over trash talking, like, you know, it's like, you know, like
it's the us versus them mentality.
Yeah. Like it's like, oh, we can have a bond because we both hate this person.
It's,
or
it's
thing.
Shown the most in sport.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
whereas, right, like, yeah, you're at a game,
yeah,
whatever game, soccer, football, whatever, and then you're on the same team.
You're in the crowd. Yeah, you feel camaraderie.
That guy's got the same jersey as you. It's like, yeah, fuck those guys, they're idiots. But they're just another dude, like having a,
yeah, you got no
watching
idea
the game.
But you have that commonality there, which is right, how humans bond, right? So,
that's right.
So yeah, I mean, they just play the game for a different reason. Like, it's obviously not going to help you improve at the game. Quite the opposite. It's going to make you way worse at the game and make you have an unhealthy relationship with the game if you want to improve. It sounds like you, Lena, you want to improve.
Mm.
And then, so you need to like really assess when you're playing with them, but you got to understand their perspective. Like, that's how they, that's...
It's probably subconscious. So
it's subconscious. That's what I'm saying. They're not intentionally doing this. You know what I mean? And again,
it doesn't mean they're bad people.
No. You know, this is just how humans bond. That's just the way it works, right? So we got to understand it from their perspective as well. You know, they clearly enjoy doing that. That's what they enjoy doing.
And a lot of the time, we've given this advice many a times, you're just going to have a tough conversation.
Yeah.
Like, if it genuinely makes you feel uncomfortable, sometimes you're just going to have to take a second to pull them aside and be like, guys, like, I really don't feel comfortable here when you flame them. Regardless of whether or not you would do it to me, I just don't like being in this call when it happens because I feel like I'm trying to improve. And I could see myself making similar mistakes. That's it. It's not that, you know, it is difficult, but it isn't. It's a short conversation. And if they're meaningful friends and they're people that you want to actively play with, they're going to respect that. They're going to appreciate that you're being honest with them anyway. Right?
There you go. You can copy and paste exactly what Curtis said. You could just be like, got the little script, have the call. Guys, can I talk to you guys for a moment? And then just read out what Curtis just said. Right there.
That's right.
All right. Next question here. Here's another question here about friends. Title of this email. We've actually done a couple of episodes, Curtis.
About
friends and toxic friendship groups. Yeah. And, you know, we've talked about Duoku a lot. You know, a lot of people know that we're very much anti-Duoku in terms of improvement of the game. So the title was, so this one's from Chio. The title of this email is, what do I do about friends hurting my climb? I was watching episode 140 of the Broken Mind Concept podcast, and at the end, it came up with toxic friendship groups. I wanted to add my dilemma to the mix and maybe get your advice on the matter while staying anonymous. He says that he's afraid that they'll see this, but it says it's low chance. All right, he's risky going into mailbag here. All right. I don't know if I should have read out his name, but he didn't say anything about that. Anyways, I have one friend who is actively hurting my climb by forcing me into only duoing with them. If I play solo, drama ensues. I'm just going to read out that line again. I have one friend who is actively hurting my climb by forcing me to only duo in with them. If I play solo, drama ensues. At the start of the year, having joined the MLA during preseason, I had gotten the courage to say, hey, I'd really love to play on my own this season. I have goals and concentrate better playing solo, but we can still play flex or whatever. And of course, I got guilt tripped into going back on my word just to keep the peace between us. As I value our friendship, but now we're coming to the end of split one and I'm nowhere near my goal. Because despite their promises of joining me for three bucks every day, I'm lucky if I get one game a month, and I'm afraid of just queuing on my own and going against their wishes. They don't enjoy league. They often say that if the ranks just reset anyway, why even bother trying to climb? I think we just have very different views of the game, but if I try to pull away, I get the short end of the stick. I want to improve and get better. They want to play casually but still climb. Morning ranks was my favorite thing ever 2 years ago, but after getting duo locked last year and it happening again this year, it just makes the whole experience a little sad, even though it's mostly my fault for giving in. I love league, but I love my friend just as much. League just makes them unpleasant at times, unless they play on their own, which is unlikely. We'll never be the same rank, and this cycle will continue. As I'm too weak to do what I want and fear conflict, is it wrong to have to put one over the other? In my eyes, there's no way to win in the situation. Part of me wishes Wright would have a magic wand and get rid of duo queue so I can just be done with this. Wowzers, Curtis. I mean, I feel like this is part of this, I think, is out of our pay grade, dude. Like this, this is, what's the personality type? I mean, this is just completely so scared of conflict. And like, I mean, you're actively, dude, this is your life, man. You're like, what's the word? Compensating? Like, you're just pleasing others and just not for yourself. I mean, it's, you know, part of it's a good trait, but this sounds terrible. Like, this is terrible. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I think this is out of our pay grade. I didn't even know how to answer this.
No.
Because it's kind of, I feel like I'm just going to say the same boring old response, which is ultimately, you know, it's going to just have to come down to a tough conversation. But the reality is that, you know, surely your friendship isn't hinged on just because you duo queue. Like, think about it logically for a second, right? If you feel as though you have to duo or your friendship is over, then what friendship is that anyway?
What is that?
That's not a friendship anyway. That's just a, you know, I don't know what that is. So I think the way you should view it is that if this person is truly a friend, or if your friendship is pure, a real friendship, they would understand, because a friendship goes both ways. That's what makes any relationship, whether it's a friendship, a partnership, whatever, it's two independent individuals who choose to be with each other but accept them for who they are, right? So that doesn't mean
And there's compromises. Right now, there's like, you're doing all compromise. It's like maybe 5% you and 95% all them. Those friendships never last. That's not going to last anyway.
It's not going to last anyway.
You're going to eventually get a breaking point.
That's correct. Because, yeah, that's right. That's right. And a friend should want what's best for you anyway. That's what a friend should put, that they should put your best interests always first. That is what a friendship is. That's what a true friendship is. So the reality is that the way you should, if you say to him, look, or he, I don't know if it's him or her here in this situation, they haven't said, but if you say to them, look, at the end of the day, I really enjoy solo queue. It's something that I'm passionate about. You don't have to be on the same page with me with this. That's okay. I'm not forcing you to play league. You don't even need to play league. You can quit if you want, for all I care. League is my passion. I'm happy to play other games with you. I'm happy to do other things. And maybe there's a compromise there. It's like, I'm going to play solo queue, but I will do this with you. You know, I'm sure there's other things that you can, other games that you can play, or other activities you can do, right? So I think you know, it's ultimately going to come down to a tough conversation, but the motivation for that conversation has to come from, you know, the friendship, you know, the quality of the friendship, really. Because if you want your, Nathan, you're spot on. If they want to have a long-term friendship, that you're going to have this conversation at one point or another.
That's
because
right.
The longer it goes, you're actually going to grow to dislike this other person eventually.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
100%. No matter how nice of a person you think you are, resentment 100% will build.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. I think it's that simple.
And I think this is a really important, not just for this friend in league, this is just all relationships.
Yeah.
Your work, your job, everything. Mm. If you're just going to just be there to please, because by you pleasing everyone actually doesn't help people as well. You know, it's actually...
It's short term, yes.
You know?
Long term, maybe not.
I can't really...
being genuine in a way.
Again, I've watched this in some sort of like psychological videos and stuff. Like, again, I can't expand on a therapist, but like, I genuinely think it's a good idea to go see therapy about this in terms of, I think this is leaking right. into other aspects
it's probably
of
other
life,
aspects
big
of
it, time. Yeah. Like, I really recommend this.
Yeah.
And again, this is coming from someone who's never done therapy. So again, but I feel like that's like a good, from right. what I've read, that's a good idea to go to.
Because yeah,
people have solved this problem through that, you know?
Yeah. And we're not professionals here in terms of this stuff.
It probably came, I think it was from watching some Healthy Gamer stuff, I think. Some Dr. K stuff probably around that. So, and he's like a professional like psychiatrist. So that's, you know, so maybe I have something reputable behind me, Curtis. All right. So Curtis, enough of friends now. Let's go to a success story here, Curtis. All right, this one here comes from Ray. From D. Curtis and Nathan. So the title of the email was Silver to Diamond this season. Appreciation and commendation based on your work. That's insane. Silver to Diamond. Wow. Let's get some context. Curtis and Nathan, I want to commend you both on being able to direct focus to the mindset around league when when internalized can help so many improve at the game and more importantly improve in all beings of their life. I also wanted to share my appreciation of your advice and his contribution to me reaching diamond, starting at silver this season. Okay, here we go. This is the context. This is very important, guys, because again, when I see all these like stories like silver, like that's basically in our experience,
impossible.
That's impossible. Yep. And here's the context here, guys. Now, I have reached platinum before in 2020 and have history of playing games competitively. So important. I'm so glad you put that context in here because I probably would be calling for more context or calling bullshit on this type of email. Yeah. So it wasn't as difficult once I was able to apply a lot of the wonderful concepts you both teach. I have another account I play with friends starting in season 8, I believe. But this was the first season I was inspired to grind. Specifically, it was great to verbalize the process, something I have been able to use before in other video games and my career to tangible success. Being able to have these labeled terms and ideas such as let's get into the details is incredibly important in any hobby. Your advice of playing what you're best at is definitely something that was important to me as I was constantly wavering between mid jungle role this season, but knew I was much better at playing jungle as I could think of the game holistically and what my team wanted to achieve versus thinking more individualistic when I played mid. Lastly, I wanted to emphasize how paramount the work you both are doing is. You're turning a video game many younger people turn to in their times of addiction and despair and helping them create an official process that could materialize into a positive mentality in and outside of the game. When I think of when I was younger, being successful in Hearthstone definitely helped me use that process and mentality to find success in other avenues of life. The most important thing being the mentality and process you apply. Although at time I didn't understand these labels. And he's got his little OPGG here. Awesome. And that's that last thing, you know, emphasizing talking about we view games as a huge positive, competitive game as a huge positive thing. That's why we do this podcast, isn't it, Curtis? Because we've saw the power in League of Legends that, again, going back to the story, we talked about the origins of the process a couple of episodes ago, if you guys remember, about Jonathan Brown. Because we were in the hardcore gamer space. We were gamers our whole life. We just thought that this is what we did. And you just play a lot and you get good at a game. But then we actually broke down the beauty of the game, the process. And yes, it can be applied to. We've had so many people write into us and through our programs. They're able to apply the principles that they learn in how to improve at League of Legends to other aspects of their lives.
Yeah, in a way, we just, you know, I feel like we just stumbled into this.
Yeah, it's that's crazy. What I said. It's an absolute, reading these emails is surreal because I'm like,
yeah,
what is going on here? Imagine 10 years ago in high school. It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
It makes
sense.
It's
really ridiculous, like, thinking about it. And you're, and yeah, like, again, we need to make it very clear, like, when we, you know, where we are today, it's the combination of many inspirations and many other, drawing inspiration from many areas. And it was, I think it all, again, I think the turning point was Jonathan Brown. And when he said, I remember he was looking at it from the outside because he came from the financial world. And he was looking, this is incredible in terms of like, I remember he was so obsessed with saying, he kept saying, this is what the fast-paced moving world is now. It's like adaptation, chaos, you know, processing of information really fast, learning and growing.
Dealing with emotions.
Dealing with emotions. It's the perfect, he believed, again, he didn't even know League. He was just watching from the outside that day.
Not a game and nothing.
First day. Yeah. The first day he was watching, and when he got described, he's like, this is a mini, he called it like a mini
simulation.
Yeah, simulation of hyper learning. And that's the way he viewed it. And it took us, we didn't believe him at the start.
We were like, can you explain this to us more? Like, what's going on here?
What the fuck are you talking about? We're just playing League of Legends. Like, get the fuck out, old man, you know? Like,
yeah.
But he was insistent on telling us. And then we finally got it, what he meant. And we're like, wow, you're actually spot on. League is this amazing vehicle for teaching people how to learn. And it's not just get more games in. There is actually something called a review and a process, and there's learning going on. What is learning? How does learning work?
How do we break it down?
How do we break it down, going deeper and deeper and deeper? And there's principles that we can probably follow, and that's where the principles book, Ray Dalio, came into play. Things that we can follow. And now here we are today. And it all started from, yeah, really Jonathan Brown and his kind of philosophy and how he viewed League at this very high level. Right? Not a game, but a tool to learn. That's fundamentally the way he viewed it. Mm-hmm. And it's true. And we've now seen it. We're now getting into working with people. We've now seen it to be the case. And he was absolutely spot on.
Mm.
And we're just very fortunate to be in a position to have met that guy, to be in the position to be high level, you know, coaches and players.
To be open-minded to that.
To be open-minded enough to do that and connecting the dots with all these other industries and then putting it all, packaging it all together to create the Broken by Concept podcast. It's just surreal.
It's very
when
surreal.
You just think about it. It's incredible. Absolutely incredible.
All right. Here's a good follow-up question here, Curtis. This one is from Joe. No one takes League of Legends seriously. Hello, Coach Curtis and Nathaniel Mott. People don't really call me that, and that is not my name. It's Nathan, but I'll take it. I am a League of Legends lover. I've been playing the game for 8 years now, and I love Riot and the rank system they have made. However, I'm writing today asking why no one takes the game and the perfection of the craft seriously. Recently, I had a discussion with my partner about the importance of League in my life. The self-growth and the competitive outlet that the game provides me is just as important as eating and exercising my life. After telling her all these things about League, I felt embarrassed. I couldn't help but think about how people outside of our community see League and gaming as a joke. How would you go about expressing something so personal to me to an outsider who just sees the game as a waste of time and childish? As confident as I am with my love for the game, it always seems as though there is some barrier that you have to break when explaining to someone why you play League. It's as if you need a good reason to be playing the game in the first place. Love the work you fellas do. Lots of love from Canberra. I'll be moving to Melbourne next March. Watch the streets for an Asian dude donning an I Love BBC shirt.
That'd be a concerning shirt.
Yeah, you know, we're in public with that.
Okay, well, you know, big picture, you know, Nathan, the real discussion here is about culture, right?
Yeah.
You know, gaming is very new. And you know, you think about how most people, right, we're going to, again, this is a bit of a broad.
I think it's good. My thing was going to be start high level as well, yeah, about the problem why League is not taken seriously.
Yeah. High level. Most people who, you know, get home from work, they might have a hobby. It could be a sport. But a lot of people, they're just going to watch Netflix, right? They're just going to go on the TV.
Or YouTube.
Spend a lot of time watching content.
Sit on their phone all the time.
It's something along those lines, right? Or an instrument. Right, so it's basically sport, instrument, Netflix, phone, entertainment, game, like not even game. Let's just remove gaming out of it for now.
Okay.
All of those quote unquote hobbies are just accepted, right? They're just not, they are the norm. That is the culturally accepted. They're culturally accepted activities, essentially. And because they've been around for so long and we understand them, right? We understand these things. They're just accepted. People don't blink an eye. It's just, that's what you do. You go home and you go on the couch and you watch Netflix for 3 hours. That's just what you do. But, you know, we don't question. But often the things that most people do, we don't question. They're just kind of like, you know, like we don't question it. Even, you know, at a high level, like working, you know, going to school and studying a particular way, like reading a book and then like studying and having a test. Like these are like just structures that are in place that aren't really questioned in a way. Like they're so big and they're so been around for such a long time. You just kind of go with it, right? Gaming at a high level is so new. Think about how long gaming as a video gaming has been around for. Like very, very, like our parents' age, like I guess then arcades, like Space Invaders and Pac-Man and stuff. But that was barely even a hobby. That's a kid thing. That's just for kids. It's barely been, in terms of real gaming, right? Competitive gaming. What?
Oh, since the explosion of esports, really.
I mean, what, 30? Like, think about StarCraft 1, like the original StarCraft and original Counter-Strike, what, like 20-ish years?
Yeah, 20-ish years, yeah.
Let's say 20-ish years.
I mean, if we want to say in Western culture, we had a burst of Counter-Strike in the early 2000s. And
but that was small niche.
And then, just obviously the rise of esports in the last, let's say 10 years.
Let's say, I would even say in the West, like maybe even 5-ish years.
Okay.
Like, yeah, barely. Let's just even be generous and say 10 years.
Six years ago was when it started to get really mainstreamish with all the investor money and all that sort of stuff.
Right. So it's been around for such a minimal amount of time, right? And at least for us, even us growing up in school, by the way, gaming on a computer was weird. Like I remember when I was in school.
Yeah, console was
No one gamed on a computer. Mm. If you played PC, you're just like a nerd. It's weird. Like who the hell goes home to play a computer game? Like that wasn't even really accepted really, right? Like when we were at school.
Well, I think it's really simple, Curtis. I think you know how you grouped all those activities like entertainment as well as learning an instrument and like playing sport. Like those things actually have really good benefits to them.
Mm.
But gaming and competitive gaming, no one knows the benefits to it. Is it as simple as that? Like, I think
people. I don't think so. Because I don't think people think of watching TV as beneficial.
They do.
What do they view it as?
As a really good de-stress relaxation.
Right.
I believe.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I feel like it's playing games.
It's a genuine waste of time.
Is more waste of time than sitting on TikTok for 2 hours.
Right. Because, like, on TikTok, maybe you could get some sort of knowledge.
No, not even. Yeah, not even that. I just don't think that those just, I don't know. Not even. I just think that it's just, because what we've had is a constant push in the mainstream media of video games is bad. So it's like, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, no. Okay, we're going to get specific. I think that the narrative is video game, like because you know, when we think of a thing, right? When we think of like a video game, there's so many, it's such a loaded term. There's like, so like, much that goes around that, right? You think of like Doritos, Mountain Dew, some like really overweight, unhealthy individual that sits in their basement, you know, the basement dweller, and like they're all embedded within video gaming as a term, right?
Yes, that's right. So we have categories, right? So let's say really beneficial activities after school, after work, again, sport, community events, meeting people, that sort of stuff. Number one, rank one. Neutral is entertainment. Just like, it's not good, it's not bad, but it's just, you know, you're just de-stressing stuff. And then you've got video gaming, which is
and
like...
And then there's like drugs, probably, like taking drugs.
Yeah. Yeah, it's in the same category.
And like even above that is probably like drinking. Like drinking alcohol is above probably, because that's a de-stress thing, right?
Yeah.
And then you've got like video games.
Yeah, like social drinking and stuff like that. Social drinking,
that's above video gaming. Yeah. That's actually probably for most people more beneficial than playing video games, right? Mm. And then you've got video games, and then you've got like drugs and like gambling and whatever it might be in there, right? Yeah. Destructive behavior.
It's genuinely just...
Yeah, you're spot on. It's actually viewed as a straight up destructive, along the lines of gambling, you know, pornography, whatever, drug taking, etc. Right? So we're in there. Mm. So we're going, we have to...
We're not just going from neutral.
We're not going from neutral to positive. We're going from degenerate behavior, life-destructive behavior to...
Just, oh, it's cool, you play games.
To actually, it's like, okay, it's not that bad. It's like kind of okay. And then to neutral.
Yeah.
You know, like you're not going to go from that to neutral. It's going to be like a slow incremental turn, right? And then this is where gaming is very difficult, is because it's just lumped in with everything else, right? League is lumped in with Final Fantasy.
World of Warcraft.
Or, you know, all these games are just, they're just in the same umbrella.
Fortnite.
Yeah, it's all together. Now, I'm not putting down any of these other games either. I'm sure there are many... They're great games, and I'm sure they can be viewed in a positive way as well.
Absolutely. Social aspect of it, obviously, all that sort of stuff, yeah.
Right, but it's like the way at scale it's viewed at as is an addictive thing that doesn't get you anywhere. It's a quote unquote complete waste of time. Right?
Hmm.
And so it makes sense why the average person, if they hear, oh yeah, I take this video game seriously, they're gonna think you're just loopy, right? Mm. They're gonna think that you're just a weirdo, they're gonna think that you're, you know, you're a bit special or whatever it might be. And that's like that's just gonna come with time. It's going to come with time, right? Like, and that's just the reality. So there's no way to cheat that. There's no way you can't. It's just going to take 30 years, 20, 30 years.
And you know why it's going to take us extra long here in the West? Is because, okay, if we agree that League's the biggest esport, right? Who are the best? Korea, China, right?
Mm.
So we're never on that big mainstream pedestal. So there's two aspects of it. It's like, okay, our pro players aren't viewed, like, they're still insanely good, right? But not viewed as the best. So it's not like you're like a Formula One. They're not as the biggest as fame in terms of mainstream, right? And then you've also got as well is that pro players and challenger players in general were really bad at articulating the game. And this level of the skill and the dedication required, again, dedication required to get good at League of Legends is lumped in as degenerate behavior versus like, I'm actually trying to improve at things. So I'd say it's more of a failure of the top end, the top influences. Let's say you go onto a stream on Twitch or something like that. You see this guy just flaming, raging his teammates. It's like, why would you take the game seriously if they're viewing their teammates that way in the game? It's like, oh, this game's easy and all sort of stuff. Then why would I take it seriously, right?
Mm.
So I think those two things are...
And also we got to be very real here. The reality with League is that when you're improving, it is a very introverted solo thing. Like, think about it. You're in your room playing on a computer.
Very good point. Right. Versus team sports, versus getting good at like a, yeah.
Think about the way social. You get better at League. And the reality... Yeah,
college sports is a huge thing as well in North America. Yeah,
and the reality with League is that although there's a lot of benefits, you know, it's very... Like, people don't... You don't know from the outside what that person is getting with that time invested, right? Like, if you think, oh, like, you know, your son, for example, or daughter is playing tennis... playing football, whatever, even like, you don't even have to know what they're doing or what they're thinking, and you just know they're out there around people, something positive is happening.
Yeah.
But if your son or daughter is in the computer in their room silent,
yeah, you don't know what's going on.
It's like
on.
You don't know like what's going on, and there's obviously a bridge, like a gap of understanding as well. They didn't grow up with games, so they didn't know what it's like as well. But I visualize, like, again, when we have children, you know, like introducing my son or daughter to League. And like teaching them these principles and like these, and then I could understand what benefits they're going to get from it. Cause I've played this game. I know what it feels like. I know what situations they're going to be in. But imagine if a parent now who's never even touched a computer, never played a computer game, how can they go from it being, well, the media are saying this, but I'm going to trust my son, you know, that like he's sitting in his room and he's going to get these crazy benefits. You know, it's so hard for them to try when the media and like everything they've been grown up with is so strong, you know?
Curtis, I got a great real world example that's really relevant to recent years. UFC. All right. What was UFC regarded as? Like, you know, fighting, cage match, mixed martial arts. That was viewed, even for us,
negative
degenerate
ways,
behavior.
Like savage.
Yes, savages, right? And then, you know, Dana White, UFC started building regulations around it, professionalizing it. Then, and started getting bigger, mainstream.
And then there was real role models. And,
real role models. Awesome, and then we got people to see these are real hardcore athletes push into their craft. You know, you look at people like Adesanya and stuff like that. Like, these are just the world-class athletes. Mm. Now there's that respect for UFC fighting nowadays. You know what I mean?
Any sport, right? Any competitive endeavor, it always has to come from the top down.
Yes, absolutely.
So this is why, you know, in the reality, Nathan, we have an obligation to get bigger.
Yep.
We have an if we want to actually make meaningful change in the industry and at scale, is that we got to have more than 12,000 subscribers. Mm. Like, we got to have hundreds of thousands of subscribers, and like, we need to be getting hundreds of thousands of views an episode to spread this message and do other things outside of this podcast and just be bigger, you know, figureheads in the industry.
I don't think it's possible to come from us, Curtis. I think it has to come from a professional player. Unless we went and we lived in Korea or China and we got rank one on those servers every year on year for 10 years, then we would have the
influence. It always has to come from the top. It has to come from the pro players.
It's not us, yeah.
No, but it will.
It will eventually, yeah.
Because the thing is, the game is evolving to a point where the people that don't do it properly won't make it
to the top.
The way the game is evolving,
so competitive.
Is because, and in a way, by the way, we are changing that
a little bit.
No, hear me out, right?
Yeah.
So coaches, grassroots, like people that are getting, like us, that are just working with the average individual, we are bumping up the average level of play across the world.
Yep.
Right. We just are, right?
Yep.
But remember, it's not just with our one-on-one coaching, with our content. And not talking just us, other coaches out there. Everyone, the level of play is getting raised up, and the way we think about the game is becoming a lot more sophisticated bit by bit. It's just taking a long ass fucking time, right? What's going to happen though is that these people that we talk, that we teach, or they see, watch our content, they're executing that, and they're thinking about that game in that way. They're getting to master tier. They're getting to grandmaster. They're beating these other players. And eventually they keep playing. They're challenger now. And so now there's a bunch of these challenger players that are actually understanding all these concepts. That now becomes the norm. And then they're in their community. They're spreading those concepts.
It's like a trickle-down effect.
This is a trickle-up effect.
Trickle-up effect, yeah.
We're actually, in a way, through content and through like understanding the game and articulating what the game really is from the ground up, you're actually spreading... you're actually, again, helping out. And so then the people that do make it at the end, like the people at the highest end, they're not just getting there through grinding thousands of games. They're getting the thousands of games, but they're doing it with a lot more intent, having probably a bit more of a process or a better attitude towards the game. And then such that in 10, 20 years, the pros, the best players are going to be way more articulate about what they're doing, how they got there, what process they need to follow. And then, like you said, now when they speak to media outlets and when that they're the figureheads of the sport, and when the West, I could say eventually maybe the West becomes a little bit more competitive in the East. It's going to be hard.
It's very hard to
very,
say
very hard this, to say that. Point. But at least then they'll be able to articulate what they're doing. And then, you know, then all it takes is something like a Drive to Survive version of League. And then the media catches up, and then you got like, then that changes the cultural aspect, or like the way the culture views the game. So, you know, in a way, that's the way I view it. It's going to be a very, very long term, but it has to start. Yeah, you're spot on. It has to be
at the top.
With those people at the top. Yeah.
So there you go, Joe. That's our answer. I probably can't even answer.
Yeah.
Why no one takes League seriously. And I guess what we're doing here is, thinking about, if it were to be taken seriously, what would that look like in the future? Where would that have to come
and
from?
And it doesn't help. And again, I'm not saying this bad, but it doesn't help that League is simultaneously a casual and competitive game.
Mm.
Like when I've always thought about this. When I view like racing, like Formula One and stuff like that. Like, is it such a thing as like, I mean, I guess there's casual go-karting, right? Like you can be a casual go-karting, but I've always found like the barrier to entry is so high in that sport that how can you be a casual?
Yeah, it comes down to barrier of entry. So that's a bad example, probably, Curtis. Let's use another example. What's a low barrier to entry sport?
No, but what I'm saying is that, like, Formula racing has it kind of like that weird, it's like it has obviously downsides because the barrier to entry is so high, but because the barrier to entry is so high, it's kind of like, in a way, I can't really comment, take my opinion here with a grain of salt, because I don't know jack shit about it, but because the barrier to entry is so high, you have to baseline take it pretty goddamn seriously
to even get to the level where you're racing.
Remotely in there.
So that in turn, people were taking it seriously.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, it's a serious sport.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
But in league, it's like you've got the majority of the player base, well, not majority, a lot of it, let's even say the majority.
Yeah, the majority.
Play it casually.
Yeah.
So it's viewed, so it can be a very bad thing. Like, league can be the most toxic thing in your life.
It can be destructive, absolutely.
That's the thing. The fact that it can be destructive is crazy.
It's crazy, yeah.
Like, we don't think of a traditional sport of it being destructive, ever. Like, if you think of a kid that's, like, after school just keeps playing soccer, like, it's never, like, sure, they might say, oh, they're neglecting their studies a bit, but it's still...
I mean, you got injuries as well, but that's, you know...
Yeah, but
you mean
it's still not viewed that bad, you know what I mean?
It's part of me now thinks now is just actually impossible.
It's really, really hard. The fact that it's so... it can be so toxic, but it can be so good. It's like this double-edged sword, you know? What's interesting, there's actually a wave. I've noticed this, like, this content coming up of Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So, you know, there's, like, this meta of Brazilian jiu-jitsu where it's, like, it's so cool. All these elite individuals do Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I've been seeing so much content of people saying how Brazilian jiu-jitsu has ruined my life.
Really?
So many people. Ah. So there's two, like, of what I've noticed, because I was like, what is this? Oh, this is clickbait. I'm just going to watch it anyway, right? And it's so interesting because I'm like, well, how could that be possible? I've only heard positive things about it, right? And the two things I've heard is that it's really addictive. Like, you get in there and you always want to, like, go, and you neglect other areas of your life.
I see. Yep.
Like, apparently there's like this whole, like, generation of, like, now people, like, this thing where people, like, quit their job, and, like, young men and stuff and young women, they, like, quit their job. They get obsessed and they, like, just go all in on Brazilian jiu-jitsu, even though, like, only the top people make money. Like, no one makes money apart from, like, the elite. It's like, which is so similar to league.
Yeah.
Only the top people make money in league. Like, most people don't make money, right? But people are, like, obsessed about it, and they think, like, they can compete because, like, the hype around Brazilian jiu-jitsu, but it's, like, ruining so many people's lives. Like, they're quitting their job and shit, and they're having to tell people, it's like, no, don't quit your job. Stay in school. It's like, what, like, are you doing?
Just use it as a good
hobby.
As
a hobby. Yeah. Like, it can be a hobby. And the second thing, it's like ruining people's bodies and shit. It's like really hard on the body, I've heard. So that's now, like, I'm starting to see that, which is interesting, which is very similar to league.
Yeah.
Right? It's got the downsides, but it's got the positives if you treat it like a hobby, you know? Mm. So there are other sports out there and other industries that are facing the same problems. Maybe not to the same degree as league, but it's definitely exists. We maybe just don't hear about it as much, which is interesting.
Very interesting conversation. A lot to think about there. I didn't think we were going to get to there, but tricky, very tricky. Not sure.
We're gonna try our best.
Try our best, you know? And we'll see what happens in the next 20,
because
30 years.
What really matters is that we know.
Absolutely.
110%, without a doubt, that league can be an incredibly positive and meaningful part of people's lives.
Yep.
But it can also be an incredibly destructive and toxic part of people's lives. And that's the reality. And that's one of those, again, contradictions, or one of those the gray area. It's you know, it's not black or white, you know?
Right, Kurt, so bringing it back to game stuff.
Okay, yeah.
This one's from Cadjus. I'm not sure how to pronounce this one. Title of this email is Developing Mental Stack Capacity. Hi, Curtis and Nathan. I've been aware of the content Coach Curtis puts out for Mid Lane for the last year or so. However, I only found out about the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and I've been working through your awesome back catalog since. I have taken great note of this concept of mental stack you guys often refer to, and have recently tried to tie it into my gameplay and self-reviews. The problem that I feel like I've encountered is that my mental stack capacity is simply not big enough. So I wanted to seek some advice on how you would recommend developing it as a skill. For a bit of background, I started playing League around 2.5 years ago when a few of my friends introduced me to it. For the first year and a half, I played the game entirely for fun, playing all roles and just getting a general feel for it. Eventually, I settled down queuing mid-primary and support secondary, where I now play Ahri, Annie, and Karma, respectively. For the past year, I've been actively trying to get better, reviewing games, seeking out specific answers in high elo VODs, getting some coaching, the whole shebang. I'm currently just at the cusp of gold, and I'm hoping to reach it before the rank split ends in order to be finally eligible to join the Milan Academy. Coming back to the lack of mental stack capacity thing, I'll explain the reason why I feel like this. I tend to be fairly obsessive about learning as a person. The urge to perfect one thing at a time has always brought me success both academically in the day-to-day and other games like Overwatch. The thing about League that I struggle with is executing a number of things at the same time. While remaining relatively sharp at each and single one of them. If I focus on trading and CSing in lane, then I lose track of the map, jungler, and objectives. Inversely, I can keep track of the opposite, but then drop CS, take bad trades, and even get solo killed. I suspect that I would eventually be able to brute force awareness of these things into my head through playing enough games, but I feel like this is in particular is what is stunting my growth as a player. Do you have any advice on how to get better at this more efficiently? As of right now, I feel like a computer with not enough RAM installed. Because I think he's got the wrong definition of what mental stack is.
Okay.
This is my read from this.
Okay.
He's saying, how do I develop more of a mental stack? You can't, right? Isn't it about, you got to build the muscle memory of all the fundamentals, you know,
okay,
repetition, and then that allows you to think about more things freely,
so there's
right?
There's two things here.
Definition's wrong.
Okay, so Nathan's spot on. The first thing is that the way you got to view a mental stack is that it's capped at 100. Let's just say it's 100, right? You've got 100 mental points, right? That's going to stay the same no matter what, right? As you get better at particular skills, the amount of points that a given skill occupies gets reduced, right? So let's say...
CSing.
Yep, let's say CSing. So let's say at the start, when you first started playing League, you might have to allocate 80 points.
I was literally going to say 80 as well, yeah.
Right, to CSing. Yep. And then you only have 20 points for everything else. But as you get better at CSing, you build more muscle memory towards that skill. You understand how to like layer minions and look at which ones are targeting what, etc. You know how long they die, how long they take to die. That might be 50, it might be 40, it might be 30, it might be 20. And it gets to a point where that it's like at 3 or something, right? So that's taking up such a minimal portion of your mental stack. So there's that aspect of things. The second aspect, which is incredibly important, and this is where I want to really go in deep on, is prioritizing things inside the mental stack. And this is incredibly difficult for me to kind of explain without seeing gameplay. And because, okay, there's two main ideas we're gonna try and talk about here. The first one is actually how mental stack... Okay, let's go back to that example with CSing, okay? Let's say you played 100 games at the same elo bracket. Okay, the same, each of us in the same caliber of opponent for 100 games. What you're going to be able to do is that number, let's say it started at 80, you can like focus on that, and that's going to go down, 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 down to the point it gets very minimal, right? Let's say it gets to 5. But that's only possible because the caliber of the opponent that you're versing,
they're not throwing extra things into your mental
stack. They're not getting better. As the caliber of the opponent gets better, right, you might have to allocate more mental stack towards that thing because it's harder to do that thing
against better opponents.
So League is it's constantly changing as you're climbing. So just because this is the main reason why you have to cycle through learning objectives. So let's say you work on, you know, let's say you worked on your trading in a particular matchup. That matchup is not going to play out the same way in Gold 4 than it would be in P4. So even though you develop the skill of trading in this particular matchup and balancing trading and CSing in this matchup in Gold 4, it's going to take up a disproportionate amount of your mental stack in a different elo bracket versus a different caliber of opponent. Okay? So there's that idea. So you need to wrestle with that idea. Okay? This is why you always have to keep going through and focusing on the same things over and over and over again. The second thing is that depending on the champion you're playing and depending on the matchup you're in, depending on the scenario you're in, you're going to have to learn to allocate your mental stack accordingly. For example, if I'm playing, let's say I'm playing Victor into Orianna, but I'm versing a low threat jungler, I'm versing Shyvana, I can afford to allocate more of my mental stack towards trading and CSing and the 1v1 and my positioning in lane, and less of the mental stack towards jungle tracking and warding and leaning. Why? Because Shyvana doesn't pose a lot of threat onto me. But if I were to verse a Shaco, or if I were to verse a Nunu, or verse a Jarvan, then I can't afford to allocate the same amount of mental stack towards my trading and my 1v1 than I would otherwise, because I have to allocate more mental energy to tracking the enemy jungle or being more aware of the threat that they impose onto me. So I might need to be thinking a little bit more consciously about my positioning in lane, about the position of the wave, about my warding and my leaning, and if that guy can kill me. I might have to actively look at the minimap way more than I would otherwise. So this is why there is no such thing as like, this is exactly the way you play out this scenario every single time. It depends on the mid jungle 2v2. So when you're thinking about the mental stack, there's a lot here at play. There is, so to really summarize that, there is the building of the muscle memory that sort of allocates less of your mental stack. There is the understanding of how to allocate your attention based off what you need to do, right? Another, because I think that's a really important one to dig deeper on. If I'm playing Lux and I just want to get to my goddamn last chapter in my level 6, I don't probably need to care as much about my trading or like certain things in lane, because I don't need to have sophisticated tethering and sophisticated trading. Like I can be inefficient with my trading. As long as I don't die, my wave's in a good position, and I hit my CS,
you'll be fine.
I'm fine. I'm purposely choosing to allocate my resources, my mental energy towards a particular aspects of my play that's going to be catered towards the champion I'm playing. And this is why understanding your reference points, what your champion needs to do, is very, very important. And then the other aspect is, as you get higher and as the caliber of the opponents get better, you're going to have to revisit things that you thought you currently knew, because the things are getting harder and they're going to push you, and therefore you're not going to be able to execute the things you thought you did as good. Is that
beautiful?
Answer the question.
I think that's spot on. Because yeah, people think that it's dynamic. It's static. But it's actually changing all the time. The better our opponents, better as you improve, you're gonna have to revisit things again and again and again. And yeah, guys, don't underestimate the power of human muscle memory.
Yes.
And subconscious. Like
intuition is very powerful.
We rely on that day to day. If we had to make a decision about, like, imagine if we had to think about breathing, we wouldn't function. If we had
or blinking
and stuff like that, our eyes would just be like, you know, then we couldn't think about other things. That's the exact same thing, guys. Like, you abuse it. It's like a hack. People take it for granted. Mm. People don't understand the power of muscle memory and subconscious. And that's why when you see, you know, people like Nathan and Curtis, why is there people that have, you know, they're challenged or they don't do anything you guys say? Guys, they have built an incredible amount of muscle memory and intuition. They can think, they can look at a situation, bam, instantly, right?
They might not even understand it logically at all.
No, that's right. They've just felt it and they know what it feels like and how to win games, right? I think we can speed up that process and really break it down for people that, you know, that maybe that person's just more talented, like, right?
And rather than doing it in 3,000 games, you could do it in 1,500.
That's right, yes. But you still got to get the games. You can't just think your way to high elo. That's not how it works.
There is an element of repetitions that just need to be getting.
An extreme element of it. It's like a combination of building the muscle memory and playing with intention and thinking about your decision making and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Great. I think that's a really good segment, Curtis, because I think that's I think that's the best segment we've done about really breaking down
the mental stack. Yeah.
I think we're just better at it because we've done it so many times, because we've struggled to explain it.
Yeah. Kind of,
you know what I mean?
I've had to think about it a lot.
In the next 50 episodes, we'll do it again. Yeah. You know?
Agreed.
Keep tripping away. All right. Next question here is from Joseph. The title of this email is, I think I just experienced improvement latency. Hi, Kings. Main support and cupcake enjoyer here. We love Coach Cupcake, friend of the podcast. So, quick recap. I am a plat 2 player since Season 8 and I was struggling to improve. Since the beginning of the season, I was still in Platinum 2, and then boom, in just a week, something like 20 games, I just went straight to Diamond 2. I have no clue on why this happened, and I'm in shock, as are my friends. Maybe I was just lucky with the team diff, but now I feel like I'm cruising in D3, and I'm playing with meat in Plat. But after more reflection since the beginning of the season, I learned a lot with you and Coach Cupcake. How to navigate my champion, what is my role, play around Fog, my mental and habits. It would have been strange that despite all this learning, I would have been at the same ELO. I know that after the reset, I might end up Plat 2 and Plateau for months, and I shouldn't take my rankers for granted. Again, maybe I was just lucky. Maybe the meta was on my side or other things. I tried to review those games and try to understand why I had so much success, and to be honest, I'm still not sure. Does this happen to your students, or do they steadily improve rank by rank every week? Is this a normal thing? Any idea how these things can happen? I'm still a bit suspicious about the success. Don't want to believe in it so much.
It's a good thing to have. I mean, I like the way he's thinking.
Yeah, question it.
Good question.
Because then you think, okay, well, how can I replicate this? You know, like, yeah. what does this mean? Can I replicate this to go to Diamond 2 to chart? Like, what's going on here?
Well, me and Nathan have answered this before. Most of our clients don't improve steadily.
Nope. It's not linear.
Big jumps, usually.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is that, again, in League, again, this is a model. We don't really, really know, but concepts in League are interconnected, right? So, like, let's say, you know, I use the analogy of, like, an electrical circuit. So you can have, let's say you imagine like a rectangle, and on each of the corners, you have like a little light bulb, right? You got wires connecting to each of them. You know, all it takes is one wire missing for all the lights to go out. But as soon as you get that one wire in, all of them connect and it's all systems go. So in laning in League, for example, it can be warding, leaning, wave management, trading, like all together, boom, great laning. But if you're missing one of them, it all just crumbles. You can have the trading, you can have the CSing, you can have the warding, but if you don't lean, you're just going to die anyway. So it doesn't matter. So in League, that happens in many aspects of the game. It can be, you know, maybe in lull states, maybe you're thinking, oh, okay, I'm thinking about, you know, who's fed on my team. I'm thinking about my role. I'm thinking about the next objective, but I didn't think about the key threats and I just get one shot of the next fight. Right? You're just missing that one thing, and it just could be that one thing, and that changes the game. That allows you to actually make the most of everything else that you've done.
That's what people say when things click. That's a great analogy. It's the circuit all coming together.
That's right. It's the last wire, boom, and then all the lights go up.
You know, the most common one that happens, this is especially for my lower ELO clients, is about how do I use one ability differently? How do I think about that differently? Best examples I've had with mass success is thinking about your Wukong E as a gap close ability, not a damage ability, right?
Nathan, this is... I absolutely love this. Yeah. I think this is one of... It should be. We need to create a catchphrase for this. Focusing on one ability is one of the most pragmatic things you could ever do in your league journey.
Results, yeah.
If you want immediate results, you're like fucking stuck in the weeds. You don't know what to do. Pick the ability that you're the worst at. Watch someone who's very good at your champion and only watch that ability. I've done that many. I did that on my Fizz journey with Mangrovish. I only watched his Q and it changed my Fizz forever.
Your life, dude.
On my ASOL with W usage. I've done that so many times and it is incredibly effective. It is one of my favorite techniques to get better at the game. We need to really, you know, drill that one home.
And it's not just ultimate. You might think, okay, it's just going to be ultimates. It's like, if anything, the more important ones are the short cooldown abilities.
Yeah. 100%. Like my Fizz Q. Like it was literally the Fizz Q.
And you might be like, Curtis, I know what Fizz Q does. I watch the champion spotlight. No, you don't.
No.
You're right. There's levels to it.
There are insane levels to it.
Yeah. So yeah, I think we've sort of explained it. I think, yeah, he just needs to understand that. Yeah, there is no, I've never really seen steady improvement. It's just bam, spike, and then maybe go down a little bit, you know, and then, you know, you go back up and then just
and
up and down.
Especially for support, like, again, it could just be little things, invisible things. You're having invisible effects on the map. It's like maybe you work with Cupcake and Cupcake taught you how to play Fog a bit better. And just that one thing, you'd be going, maybe you're going mid instead of going directly bot, then that's allowed you to clear vision mid, protect your mid laner. Now your mid laner has vision. He's able to play more aggressively. So now mid's having highly likely just going to play better. You get that one roam off mid that changes mid lane for the rest of the lane. Boom. That can just change the game.
That's right. And you don't see that. You know, because again, it might not just be a kill. It might just be you physically being there versus not being there changes the League of Legends game massively.
Yep, or you crash that one wave a little bit earlier, which allows the wave to bounce out versus not. Otherwise, you would have got ganked or whatever. Hmm. Changes the game.
And that's why the end of review process exists, because we understand the significance of those type of mistakes. Again, that you might be preventing invisibly.
It's very hard for you guys to see it, though.
Yes, it is.
Well, you can see the things you're doing, but you won't know the result of
the
that.
Effect of the entire game.
It'd be very difficult for you to understand that.
All right, so let's do one more question, Curtis, yep. to wrap up here. I still had more here, but
choose wisely.
We've done that.
Heads on the chopping block.
Okay, we've actually done quite a bit today. All right, let's do this one. I think this one might be a shorter one here. Okay. All right. The title of this email is Extreme Fear of Champion Commitment. Extreme. We already know that people lose their minds over choosing champions, right?
People have commitment issues, but I didn't know if it was commitment issues in league or real life, you know, like commitment issues in real life. And the people have commitment issues in league
with a champion. Yeah. It's like you're marrying the champion. People like to something. All right, let's read this out. So this is from Vu. I like to think that with a lot of introspection and a little bit of help from the podcast, my relationship to the game has improved dramatically this year. There's just one thing holding me back. Consistently around the 30 to 50 game mark on any champion, I find myself thinking that the grass is greener on the other side. I think it's a mix of getting frustrated at champion limitations and sometimes getting frustrated that after so many games, I'm still struggling with the same mistakes. I even struggle with this on champions that win rates rise. I've been doing quite well with.
Okay, so you're saying that even though he's doing well with the champ and like he's getting results, like
oh, sorry, I even struggle with this on champions that win rate.
Yes, yeah, so what he's saying is that when he's like actually getting success with the champ, you'll still think that the grass is green on the other side.
I think that little line here. I think it's a mix of getting frustrated of champion limitations. I mean, that is the biggest thing that people quit a champion because they only are focusing on the net. Because you get to see, the weaknesses of a champion get exposed the more you play it. And you don't emphasize the weaknesses of the champion when you first play. That's called the honeymoon phase, you know, the first 10, 20 games, which is very commonly what we see is that people actually play really well with the champ because they're free flow, no expectations. They have an idea of how the champ works in their first 10 to 20 games, then number 50, 60 mark. So it's very common. And again, it's simple. It's as simple as exactly what he said. It's because the weaknesses are getting exposed. And when you lose games that feel really bad, you think this champ is the worst champ in the game and you're not thinking of being, think of it as a numbers game. Okay, I lose these games instantly, but I'm going to just keep chipping away at the games that I'm going to play to my identity, do my job, and I'm actually going to really win and climb.
And I'll be honest, I do think there's something to be said here also about, you know, like breaking up the learning journey. Like sometimes, like, you know, in an ideal world, would sit there and would play 80 games with a champ.
Yep.
But I sometimes feel like that does more damage than good sometimes.
It's too theoretical.
It's like, I just feel like the reality is that, let's say you already has a champ in his pool and he's trying to expand his pool. Like maybe take 2 days off from that champion, come back to it 2 days later. And go for another stint. And then or do like that, what I call the 2-for-1 block method. You do 2 blocks and then do 1 block on your main or of your main champ. Like, I think that some people, and again, because I've lost my mind on many a champions before playing too much of it. And a part of me feels like this might not be, it could be a combination of obviously, yeah, the grass is green on the other side. But only because they've played so much of that champ, they've just lose, they're it's not even about the other champs. It's just they're growing a dislike for that champ because they've just played it too much.
They're stuck in a certain style of game or certain
perspective.
Just refresh your perspective. And it actually gives you more appreciation for the champion again. Yeah, I need to actually revisit this because I do recommend people, so just you playing one champ no matter what.
I
think it ruins the champ sometimes.
Very rare that someone can do that.
Like, I agree.
And is that speaking from someone that's really done that a lot with my guides? Like, I've done that many a times, and I've lost my mind many a times. And I would say I would, you know, I'm an anomaly. We're anomalies. And if I'm struggling to do that with my perspective, I don't think the average person, that's a wise choice for the average player. So I think just take your time. Even if it takes a little bit longer, I think that it's okay to ease it. You know, you got to do both. You got to suck it up and do it.
Yeah.
But you got to keep in mind that, you know, you got to, it's okay to maybe play your main champ for like a day or two and then come back to it, you know?
So do you have an idea of the ideal? Like, is it like you should play 30 games and then have a break for 2-3 days, play other champs? Like,
well, I think there's two things to play. I think, again, the 2-for-1 block method. I think that's very important.
Yep.
So 2 blocks on your main of your main champ for every one. Sorry, 2 blocks of the new champion on your Smurf for every 1 block of your main champ on your main, right? Do that for as long as you feel like you need to do it. Now, if you're losing your mind at game 40, game 50, right? Because I think it depends on everyone. I think it depends on how much you're enjoying the champ.
Because then you got one trick that will play thousands of games.
Exactly. It's so personal. Like, you got to just listen. You just got to be honest with yourself.
Yeah.
You got to be really fucking honest with yourself. You know, I feel like I'm more on your side where I'm stubborn and I just want to get it over and done with.
Yeah.
But I actually feel like that's not effective. Mm. I don't think that's an effective way to do
it. It's like brute forcing it.
It's brute forcing it, but I think it's very difficult to brute force it.
Yeah. I mean, big picture, you still got to have appreciation for champ mastery, but you got to be pursuing, I guess the problem we're trying to solve is you need to pursue champ mastery with clarity, like a clear, fresh,
With fresh perspectives. That's
constantly.
Correct.
Because you can go and you can just make yourself worse and worse at the champion of the game by just jumping in and you just got to get out of the hole.
And the more you play with that negative mindset, the worse you will think the champion is.
Yes.
And then you're not just going nowhere. You're actually getting worse. Mm. I've genuinely seen that. I've literally done that as well. You get worse at the champ. Did that with Ari. I got worse at the champion. So I think that, how weird is that? I wouldn't touch the champ for 2 weeks, come back, and I'm better at the champ than I was, even though I haven't played in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, that's just, you know,
The
fact that that's possible says something about that process, you know?
Refreshing the perspective.
So I think that you got to find a way to, so I think for some people that might mean just even taking a break on a weekend, you know, not touching the game for a day or two. For some people that might mean you might need to put away that champ for 3 days. For some people that might mean just a day. I think it's all case by, I don't think there is a cookie cutter formula here. I think you really got to be honest with yourself, at least in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. And I am thinking of some success stories with that. I am thinking of, with some of my Soul 2 members, like they played one champ. They actually got relatively good at the champ, and then they sort of staggered a little bit, and they just played another champ that they sort of had mastery on and just rocketed up.
Mm.
Anyway, I got to think about this more over the weekend.
Yeah, I don't have a fully answer for it, but all I'm saying is that you just got to be honest with yourself, man.
Yeah, I think again,
but doesn't mean you can give up. And I will say, you know, I know this is, we'll wrap this up. We'll make this last little thing here. It's kind of an additional topic here. You know, we talk a lot about champ mastery. You know, League is this game where it's another contradiction. We love our contradictions here, is that developing champ mastery is incredibly valuable and very, very important. But there's also value in champ pool cycling. So you've got these two ideas that run counter in a way where like, for example, let's say you're a platinum player and you have 3 champs in your pool, right? Or 2 champs in your pool. And then one of them, you've played for like, let's say you've played an entire split on a champion. Let's say you've played Victor, or let's say Rek'Sai for an entire split, you played like 100 games, 150 games. Sometimes, because you're actually grown sick of the champ, you're actually not enjoying the champion, you're better off putting that champ to the side and actually learning a new champion instead.
Yeah.
Putting us aside, just literally not even playing it, because you'll come in with a fresh perspective, you'll be motivated, you'll be hungry, you'll be actually wanting to get into the details. And people think, oh, but isn't that the waste of time? I've just thrown around 150 games of Rek'Sai. No, you still learned a lot about the game.
Still there.
And you might revisit him in the future, but then you've added something in, and then you do that again for the next split. Let's say you grind out and you burn out on the next champ. You go to another one. There's something to be said with champ pool cycling. It's like you develop champ mastery to like a pretty solid level, and then you move on. That's the champ pool cycling, right? You do that over 2 years, every split. And after 2 years, you've learned four champs to a pretty high level. That can sometimes be better than brute forcing that one champ for like a year and a half. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm. Because what I've noticed is that in order to push through plateau points and really get into the details, you've got to be motivated. The small details won't just stumble. You're not just going to trip over the small details.
Like, you have to be looking for
them.
You've
got to be fucking digging. So, you've got to have a metal detector, and you've got to be scanning for them, because they won't happen. And if you're not in that mindset of, I'm enjoying it, and I know that I'm motivated to find it, you're not going to do it. If you're hating your champ and you're actually not motivated to queue up and play ranked with that champ, what I've noticed is that they're not going to get into the details in the review. No. It's too theoretical.
It's like learning, the action of learning a new champion is so exciting that's like infectious. It just goes back to that, and then you can bring that infectious behavior to your old champion that you burnt
out. It's almost like the idea that a poor plan executed as well is better than a good plan executed poorly.
Yeah.
It's like you can, right? The good plan would obviously be, the great plan would obviously be
play 200 games, be insane.
Play 500 games of two champs.
Yeah.
And just get to like just be getting into the details and like grinding the small things, right?
Yeah.
The reality is that most people are going to do that very poorly. They're going to get burnt out. They're going to hate the champ.
Yeah.
And they're actually not going to find the small details. So trying to do that poorly is actually a giant waste of time a lot of the time. So what they'd be better off doing is doing either swapping the champ, which is actually maybe not objectively not the best strategy, but doing it well because they're actually motivated, at least engaged, and they're intentional, you know?
Mm.
So that's where I'm at with a lot of... I actually said to a client this morning, I said, stop playing this champ. Stop playing Victor.
Yeah.
I said, you hate it. You're not enjoying it. And I'm I know what I'm going to say. If I would have usually said, all right, well, we're going to work on your R's, details, your W's.
Yeah.
And I know if we leave this call, you're not going to do that in the review. I know for a fact.
Mm.
I'm wasting your time and you're wasting my time. Mm. So I'm just going to cut the crap and I'm going to say, stop playing this champion and pick up something else.
Yep. I literally did that with Spencer, who was plat one for many, many months by Volley Bear. I think I've told the story.
They lose their mind.
Dude, I was losing my mind reviewing them. Like, here we go. He's in the tank Volley Bear game. And and then I said, stop this just champ. Stop. He played Eve Diamond in a week.
Saying like, I think that some people just need to just give up and just play something else. And it's not because you can't do it, it's that like you got to be motivated.
You
got
to reignite the motivation
again. You got to reignite the passion for the game. We ultimately play the game because it's a passion, right? Mm-hmm. You got to be passionate about getting into the details.
God, the topic of motivation in the human brain is just so crazy. Fascinating.
I actually had someone write to me today, I think it was Grindy, and he said, the other week, I was feeling really like sluggish with my like reviews and everything, and I was just sleeping 8.5 hours. But he said, this week I'm so motivated, like I'm like on another level. I'm had 6.5 hours sleep, but I'm like jacked, like mentally, like I'm popping. Like, think about that. That's just motivation. That's just like the mind is something we don't understand about like being switched on. Mm. Even you might have less sleep, you're more like, you know, switched on. Something there, man. I don't know. It's probably some chemicals that can explain it, but you know.
I guess it's like looking forward to things and goals. I mean, I'm trying to think about the launch of like the league season and stuff like that. Like, so excited. Or like really back in the day, like the launch of Guild Wars 2.
Yeah.
I didn't sleep at all that night and I was so excited and wired, ready to go when the game got released, you know?
Yeah.
Because I was looking forward to it so much.
Yeah. I remember, dude. I remember you were obsessed. All right, we'll wrap it up.
Yep. I think that's a good way to end it.
Yep.
Lots to think about. This is actually a very educational podcast for me, Curtis, as well. This is lots of perspective I've gotten from these conversations. So next week,
there'll be
probably no episode.
Likely not.
Yep. And then we'll be back the next week after that. Curtis. And Curtis will inform us on his trip to China.
Yep.
It's the promised land.
That's right. We'll see how we go.
All right, good work, guys. Let's keep on improving, and we'll see you next time.